You don't have to take any more calls for a while. I have a little book here, if you can get it focused in, Darrell. The Discovery of Genesis. How the Truths of Genesis Were Found Hidden in the Chinese Language by C.H. Kang and Ethel R. Nelson. Give me a picture of it. The Discovery of Genesis. Now, the Truths of Genesis Were Found Hidden in the Chinese Language. C.H. Kang and Ethel R. Nelson. We have been talking about language and translations. I thought I would go sideways from the Wycliffe studies I was reading the last couple of nights to introduce you to this little book. More than 20 years ago, a small book printed in Hong Kong entitled Genesis and the Chinese came into my possession. I found its contents more than stimulating. Chinese characters were dissected and amazingly shown to tell the stories found in the early chapters of Genesis. The author talking. I reorganized the material to follow the same chronological order as the Genesis history and repeatedly used it while studying the Bible with both Thai and Chinese students during my years as a medical missionary in Bangkok, Thailand. These presentations were always accepted with considerable interest and wonder. Later, after we again took up residence in the United States for the purpose of the continuing education of our children, my son informed me that a friend of his at college was the grandson of the author of Genesis and the Chinese. It was thus that the address of this elderly Chinese minister, C.H. Kang, was obtained. He presently resides in Singapore. Assuring Pastor Kang of the enthusiasm I had found for his project among not only Orientals but among many Occidentals, I offered to prepare his material in a new form for presentation to a wider audience, and it's going to go wider tonight. My fascination with the subject mounted as he sent a great volume of additional new characters to integrate into the manuscript. I was curious to know how he happened to become devoted to delving into the mysteries of the Chinese characters. About 40 years ago in China, he explained in a letter, he had been distributing Bible portions of the book of Genesis as a chaplain in a mission hospital. A return visit to one patient's room resulted in a confrontation with a very intelligent but puzzled Chinese lady who told him what she thought of the tract. It's a very fine fairy tale for children, she said, but hardly worth an adult's time. She then proceeded to let him know that in her opinion, educated people believe in the evolutionary theory of origins. Our Chinese friend was embarrassed that he had, at that time, too little scientific persuasive evidence to substantiate the Genesis narrative of beginnings. He himself had always accepted it by faith, simply as the Word of God. He wrestled with the problem for days, until something that he had observed in a footnote of a Mandarin Chinese textbook used by a missionary came to mind. Get ready, Darrell, with your picture right up here as close as you can get it and as steady as you can get it. Get right behind me over my right shoulder. The character in the Chinese language, meaning boat. Look at it closely. That's good, Darrell. Stay on that character. Had been analyzed as follows. It consists of the character for a vessel. Focus in on it. Hold it right there. Well, you see the vessel is that portion of the total character for boat. The character for eight, which is up here, and the character for a mouth, which is right here. The three characters, vessel, eight, and mouth, combine. I'm sure you can't see this on radio, but you can take my word for it, and I've given you the source of the book, and I don't know how to draw a word picture of Chinese characters, except that the figure for boat is on the left side of the total character, and on the right side of the total character, one above the other, are the strokes that convey the meaning eight, and beneath that, looking like a little small handmade wastebasket, is the symbol for mouth. Drop it down, Darrell, till I get mouth. Drop your camera down. There. Mouth, eight, vessel. The comment followed on the note, footnote in that Mandarin text. Interestingly, Noah's Ark, the first great boat, had just eight passengers. Noah and his wife with his three sons and their wives. If this is not a mere happenstance, there should be other equally relevant characters, reasoned Kang. I might add, Noah was God's mouthpiece. Quickly, he wrote down the character for to create. And here, on the other side, is the character for create. Again, a combination of several characters. Mr. Kang was astonished as he analyzed the components in this figure for the first time. He had been led by the footnote in a Mandarin textbook on the symbol for boat. Now he analyzed the figure for to create. It consists, in the upper right-hand portion of the series of components, of the symbol for dust or mud. The little stroke line to the left of that, which looks to you, the listener on radio, like a Picasso-type drawing of a little ridge with a tree or a cross on it. And a stroke like a elongated apostrophe just on the left edge of it is the symbol showing life or motion. So you have dust or mud with the symbol of living dust or mud, with the symbol underneath it, much like we bracket, although it's a tighter on the left side type bracket with a extended T on it that comes completely under the rest of the symbols, with two little angular strokes right above it for walking. Put all the symbols together. The first being dust or mud. Underneath that is mouth, the same symbol we encountered in boat. Then the small stroke for life, the small downward stroke to the left of the symbol for dust or mud, indicating movement or life. And underneath all of it, the symbol that means able to walk. This brought to Mr. Kang the text in Genesis 2:7. Then the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed with his mouth into the nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being, not a baby, but an adult, able to walk. Dust Dissection of this character stimulated Pastor Kane's interest. He was led by the footnote in the Mandarin text on the symbols that combine to give the meaning boat. This analysis of the symbol for create, and again, like so many things of this nature, which are just remnant clues from ancient times, one or two illustrations are insufficient. The interest was so stimulated in Pastor Kane that he then gave his life in a search that lasted for four decades. This author, who combines with his work, says, "My personal study into the history of the written Chinese language through various treatises in English found in Harvard's Chinese-Japanese Yinqing Library gave the approximate time of origin for the written Chinese language as 2500 B.C. This dating is provocative, for it coincides quite closely with the time of the great dispersion of races from the Tower of Babel in Nimrod's day, as calculated from the biblical record. Discussion of this project with other missionaries from the Orient and friends precipitated some questions." I'll skip over the questions, which nearly lead up to saying, okay, let's get into it. Theories of man's origin have haunted scientists and theologians alike for years. They have debated the authenticity of the beginnings of life on this earth as recorded in Genesis. Interested people the world around, it seems, have either accepted these writings by faith or have considered them mere fables. What would your reaction, this writer says, to an extra-biblical source of the same narratives as portrayed in the first 11 chapters of Genesis, those hard-to-believe early writings, in a culture that presently has no connection in its cultural and current psychological consciousness of their origins to biblical roots? One might think of looking into the most ancient records and artifacts of the oldest civilization in the world to see if you can find sources to confirm, this writer said, and he says that would lead us to China, which proudly claims the distinction of 4,500 years of unbroken civilization. But China? Who would consider this country, with its religious mixtures of ancestral worship, Taoism, its myths and magic, Buddhism and its superstitions and divinations, Confucianism and its scholarly teachings, as a depository of anything Judeo-Christian? Yet if we take a journey backward in time, passing the 1st century B.C. when Buddhism was introduced, the 5th century B.C. when Taoism and Confucianism simultaneously blossomed, and continue back 1,500 or even 2,000 years more, we find a different religious atmosphere. There we find the little appreciated evidence, and I would say until... Well, let's just keep reading. There we find the little appreciated evidence that these ancient people served only one God, had no myths or idols, kept a strict moral code, and they called their God Shangtai. Here's your symbol. Or Shangti, which means combining the symbol above or heavenly with the symbol emperor, the heavenly emperor. It is supposed that the Chinese originally migrated from a site in Mesopotamia, for they show evidences of similarity to the later Babylo-Assyrian culture and arts, sciences, and government. The approximate date of their origin, 2500 B.C., is surprisingly close to the strict chronological dating of the great event at the Tower of Babel, which resulted in the division of all mankind into new linguistic groups. If God at that time truly confused the mother tongues of the earth, these people carried with them newly acquired spoken language. They also must have had an accurate knowledge of historical events from the beginning of time, which they communicated by word of mouth. And this should have been an accurate record, since the period span was only three patriarchal lifetimes, Adam to Methuselah to Shem. Though there were eight in between, we're talking about Adam living until Methuselah starts and Methuselah living until the flood, and Shem carrying on after the flood. Because of the geographic isolation of China by mountain ranges, deserts, and oceans, this race of people was sealed off to itself, free from outside influences, and would tend to have a remarkable sameness to its characteristic culture, undisturbed over 2,000 years. When the Chinese, given a new language, if the Tower of Babel story is correct, early in their history as a separate people, found a need to communicate with a written language, a system of word pictures was invented in keeping with the characteristic calligraphy of the ancient world. Pictographs. These early graphic symbols were combined in meaningful ways to convey ideas called ideograms. And these picture stories of necessity had to contain common knowledge in order to be understood. It would have been only natural to use as a basis for some of the ideograms the history of the ancient beginnings of humanity, with which all were familiar by oral tradition and their historic roots. Consequently, the written Chinese language is composed of characters uniquely adapted to the possibility of continuing the stories of Genesis, which they carry in their memory traces. I've often said that God chose Abraham to keep the pure story of Revelation. But the fact that you encounter similar stories in many cultures is but further proof of a common historic memory trace from mankind coming from a common origin. Without the protection of God, they would simply seek ideograms, this writer is saying. They would have a broad commonality of understanding because they contain common elements in their history, which had been passed on word of mouth. We might illustrate at this point just what an ideogram is and how a concept such as the word tempter, one of the designations of Satan, the tempter, for example, could be translated into an expressive written character by graphically depicting the story of Eve's encounter with the devil in the Garden of Eden. If you had in your history trace memory of mankind falling through the temptation of Eve, you have common ground for ideograms. Therefore, look at the Chinese language character for the tempter. It starts with three primitive pictographs: a garden, field, or landed property. This is the symbol. It's like a cross inside of a box. Where the box being, get where my pencil is, the box being very similar to mouth, but with the square in it, you have the symbol for garden or field. This represents the Garden of Eden in this writer's interpretation of the origin of this building up of the symbol of the devil. A man, son, shows the humanoid aspects of the devil, who spoke to man as a man to Eve. This is the symbol for man or son. I would probably, if I were doing this with Cain, I would begin to wonder if man as we know him was the result of this encounter with a serpent, because there's a serpent look about it. But the symbol for man or son is incorporated into the symbol for devil. Even though through the medium of a serpent, Then you add the word for secret or private. Get the picture here. I'm going to spin the page to get the rest of it. These three combine for devil. Here's your symbol for man, for you that are looking. Here's your symbol for field. Here's your symbol for secret or private. And you're dealing with a living thing. That's the symbol we already remember from the previous symbol, as they build these symbols and weave them together. And the symbol, secret or private, because it was a clandestine approach to Eve. These three symbols, with the apostrophe, as I said, indicating alive, are combined to form the symbol of the devil. All three put together, let me turn back to it, form the symbol of the devil. But the tempter combines the symbol of the devil with something else. Let's keep going. To be the devil is then placed under the cover of protecting trees. Using the symbol of cover, here's the symbol for the tempter. The symbol of cover is added. You see that? Now, to describe it to those on radio, the devil consists of the box-like symbol of Gardner Field on top, with just to the left and above it a bit is the little stroke of the line, like an apostrophe leaning a little bit too much down toward flat, but the symbol of life is put alongside the upper left corner of the symbol for field. And underneath that is the symbol for man or sun. And right underneath the left corner and contained within the total pictorial symbol is the symbol for secret or private. That whole symbol then is placed in the symbol of the tempter underneath the symbol of a tree, two of them. And over all of that is the symbol for cover. Thus, the symbol of the devil is placed under the cover of protecting trees. The devil then waited for Eve in the forbidden tree, which was located in the middle of the garden next to the tree of life, hence two trees. Furthermore, he was under cover, being hidden in the tree, and also camouflaged as a serpent. By uniting these primitive pictographs into an ideographic character, the word tempter, which is the devil symbol under the two trees, covered in disguise, and the word tempter flows from this entire ideographic combination of characters. Now watch me closely with your camera. Thus, secret plus man plus garden plus the symbol for being alive equals devil plus two trees, cover or camouflage, all put into one symbol equals tempter. Add them up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4. Those four together make the devil, plus trees 5 and covers 6. The total of the six symbols equals the devil as the tempter. That's pretty heavy stuff. You want me to continue, or am I put you to sleep already? I find it rather fascinating. You know,